Welcome to the St. Andrew Sunday Morning Sermon Podcast. You can connect with us online at www.gostandrew.com.
Today's scripture reading is Matthew chapter 20, verses 1 through 16. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. After agreeing with the laborers for the usual daily wage, he sent them into his vineyard. When he went out about 9 o'clock, he saw others standing idle in the marketplace. And he said to them, "You also go into the vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right." So they went. When he went out again about noon and about 3 o'clock, he did the same, and about 5 o'clock, he went out and found others standing around. And he said to them, "Why are you standing here idle all day?" They said to him, "Because no one has hired us." He said to them, "You also go into the vineyard." When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his manager, "Call the laborers and give them their pay, beginning with the last and then going to the first." When those hired about 5 o'clock came, each of them received the usual daily wage. Now when the first came, they thought they would receive more, but each of them also received the usual daily wage. And when they received it, they grumbled against the landowner, saying, "These last worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the day and the scorching heat." But he replied to one of them, "Friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for the usual daily wage? Take what belongs to you and go. I choose to give to this last the same as I give to you. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or are you envious because I am generous?" So the last will be first, and the first will be last.
Every so often, as you drive past one of those home improvement stores in certain towns, you might see them standing on the corner. The local day laborers dressed in threadbare blue jeans and weathered cowboy hats with sack lunches and thermoses perched on the curb beside their feet. They stand ready to work if work will come. Some are good with shovels, others with brick and mortar or paintbrushes or pickaxes. They will take whatever work they can get, wherever they can get it, at any time of the day, before then returning in the evening to neighborhoods most of us will never see, to be with families most of us will never know, before rising early the next morning and returning once again to a life most of us can never imagine. You see fewer of them here in the Denver area, but when I lived in San Diego, I would see them every single day on my way to the office. They were always there by dawn, as many as 30 or even 40 of them. And by noon, their numbers would become considerably smaller, reduced to a handful of hopefuls still waiting for work that most likely by then would not come that day. And I often wondered if these were the men who had arrived to the corner too late, or if perhaps they were new to the corner with less seniority, or if they were like the overlooked kids on the junior high playground who just never seemed to be chosen whenever the kickball teams were divvied up. I often wonder what would become of those men at the end of the day, what it might be like to meet your wife and kids at the door, dejected, empty-handed, shaking your head, "Nothing today. I'll try again tomorrow." According to Matthew, Jesus looked around his little corner of the world one day and noticed that there were more than a few people who never made it off the curb when opportunity and good fortune rolled into town. Some were poor or disabled. Some were considered the spiritual rejects of their day, Gentiles, Samaritans, tax collectors, prostitutes and sinners, widows and orphans. The one thing they all shared in common was their invisibility and their anonymity. Nobody ever saw them. Nobody ever knew them. Nobody ever cared about them. Maybe they were born on the wrong side of the tracks. Maybe they had the wrong last name. Maybe they had made some bad choices along the way and had fallen from grace. Or maybe luck just never seemed to break their way. And they always seemed to come out on the losing side of life. Whatever their story, they belonged to that sad group of social and religious cast-offs who were never given a place at the table, so to speak, while those who had it all together and were convinced that they were God's favorite children seemed to just go on feasting on the best portions of life. Well, Jesus tells a story one day about what he intends to do about that disparity in the world. He says a certain farmer rises before the crack of dawn, reads the morning headlines while chasing down his scrambled eggs with a cup of coffee. And then, pulling his heavy boots over his heels, he spans his 1,000-acre spread. It's harvest time. And there's a cold spell on the horizon. He'll need help right away bringing in the harvest. And so he makes his way out to his old flatbed Ford and takes the dusty one-lane road into town, where a crowd of day laborers stand patiently on the corner, warming their hands and waiting for the signal. The only workers bold enough to hit the scene this early, says Jesus, are those who are desperate. These are the ones who stayed up all night rolling their last coins, wondering how in the world their family would make it another day. And the farmer pulls up alongside them in his Ford, offers them a fair wage for an honest day's work, opens the tailgate, heads back to his field with them. By 9 o'clock that morning, the farmer looks over his land again and can see that more workers will be needed to get this job done. So he drives back into town, finds some more workers just standing around waiting, hoping. By now, a third of the day is already over, but he still offers them work and tells them that he'll pay them what's right. At noon, there's still so much work to be done and still not enough workers to do it. So he drives the old pickup back to that same corner. He tells the workers he'll pay them what's right if they come and work for him. At 3 p.m, he climbs back into that truck again, brings more workers back. And would you believe that even at 5 o'clock, he just can't help himself. He goes back into town one more time to pick up a few more workers, none of whom by then ever expected to be put to work. Maybe they're too old or too tired, but the farmer doesn't see them that way. He hires them anyway, and he puts them to work in his field, telling them, I'll pay you what's right. Jesus says in the story, at sundown, it's quitting time. It's time to settle up with his workers, some of whom have been in the fields now for 12 hours, some for 9, some for 6, some for 3, and a few for just maybe an hour or so. The farmer chooses to pay first those workers who were hired last. He calls them forward, and all of the other workers are watching. They are ready to calculate their paycheck based on what the one-hour crew is going to get paid. The farmer gives them, the one-hour crew, a denarius, which was at that time the equivalent of a full day's wage. The rest of the workers really like this farmer now. You work for just 1 hour and you get a full day's wage? Exactly what kind of crop is this guy growing? The 12-hour crew, those poor guys who have just been laboring under the blistering sun for 12 long hours, are already doing the math. Based on the compensation schedule, they can expect to be paid 12 times the 1 hour crew, right? But when the farmer calls them forward, he hands every last one of them one denarius. Each worker, regardless of when they punch their time cards, receive the same wage, one denarius. It's just not fair, they complain. You don't understand. You pay us according to what we've earned. Give us what we deserve. But the farmer tells them, no, maybe you don't understand. When I picked you up this morning, I told you, if you work for me, I'll pay you a denarius for the day. Well, here's your denarius, just like I promised. This, by the way, would be an HR nightmare in today's world. And this is not exactly a sound business plan. Any commercial enterprise that tried to operate on the basis of equal pay for unequal work would soon be hard-pressed to find anyone foolish enough to work all day. But the story is not about how to run a business. It's about how God runs God's business. And it dramatically overturns the conventional ways people think about God and about other people. Do you ever find yourself lured into mistakenly assuming that you, quote, deserve it? You know, all the rewards, all the comforts and privileges and simple pleasures that make life fulfilling and enjoyable? Do you ever fool yourself into thinking that this is all the result of my own doing? I will confess that from time to time, I catch myself falling into that I deserve it trap, trying to convince myself that the circumstances into which I was born, the opportunities I've been given for a good job, a good education, good health, all the breaks that went my way but really could have gone so differently, even the good friends and family who will do just about anything for me, I can easily fool myself into believing that somehow I deserved all of these on account of my hard work or my determination, my sincere faith, maybe just because I think the world owes it to me. But I've learned over the years that the word deserve can be such a dangerous and idolatrous word. It's not a word that works on the oncology unit at the hospital. It's not a word that works in the unemployment line downtown or at the local food pantry counter or at the scene of some tragic accident. Some people among us carry crosses too heavy to imagine, while others among us just move through this world relatively unburdened by the troubles of life. And the truth is, the word deserve just doesn't explain why life often works like this. I am, like you perhaps, a big fan of hard work. Don't get me wrong. Determination, good intentions, a fierce devotion to one's goals. I hope I can say this, God honors that effort. And all of these, of course, we know will improve our odds of success and happiness immeasurably. But still, don't we know in our heart of hearts that none of these are enough? We still know that something more is necessary, something beyond our own capacity and efforts. As people of faith, we call that something grace. To those who know fulfillment and success in this world, grace says, You are here, but you might never have arrived were it not for God who created the way for you. That's grace. And to those who know deep hardship and grief in this world, grace says, you are here, and you might never be able to go on were it not for a God who promises to create a way for you. Grace is God's unmerited favor at work in our lives. It isn't about what we deserve, because grace is never about us. Grace is about what God desires for us, because grace is always, always about God. Did you notice that no one in the parable that Jesus tells actually gets what they deserve, but that all of them at the end of the day are given exactly what they needed when the day began? When each of them rolled out of bed that morning, they were all unemployed. But by the time they arrived back at their homes, their morning prayers had been answered. Let me guess, you don't like this parable. I mean, we live in a bottom-line culture where time and effort are rewarded. Those who work harder and longer are supposed to get more than the slackers and freeloaders who come late to the scene. And the world turns on the principles of fairness, giving people what they are worth according to their ability and their effort and their commitment and accomplishments. We live in a meritocracy where there are the deserving, the less deserving, and even the undeserving. But put yourself just for a moment in the shoes of those who were hired last that day in the story. If you're one of the unlucky ones who always seem to be last or lost or overlooked or disregarded, then you know that life is rarely fair anyway. And sitting in the back of that old Ford pickup, riding home that night at the end of the day, holding in your hand that one precious coin, it feels pretty good for a change. It feels like windfall. For the first time in a long time, the scales finally tipped in your favor. And for once, you say to yourself, I didn't get what I deserved. For once in my life, I was given what I needed. The parable says that God will not rest. God will not stop coming back into town until every last one of us climbs into that truck and is given what we need, not what we deserve. I remember a man in my former congregation. He had reached the end of his rope. He had dangled over the lonely cliff of addiction for so long that he finally lost his grip and lost everything that really ever mattered to him, his family, his friends, his dignity. He lost everything. And when he finally sobered up, he knew that he'd have to go to the ends of the earth to get it back. It took a long time. In fact, like those laborers in the parable, it was like he stood out in that corner for a very long time, working a recovery program, waiting for grace to drive by and pick him up and bring him back home. And when it finally did, he found a place once again in the very family that he nearly destroyed. I remember there were some who thought that his wife was a fool for taking him back. They said he didn't deserve it, that it was unfair that a person who had caused so much pain and conflict could just walk back into the house through the doorway of forgiveness. But there were a few who understood. They understood that God does not rest until What is left behind and lost is brought home on the flatbed of grace. And so part of the message of this parable is that we do not get what we deserve, but we get what God knows we need, whether we started at 9 o'clock or at noon, or have just come in on the 5 o'clock shift. It's all grace. But there's one other thread of good news here in this parable. It's a very practical and deeply social implication that we cannot overlook in this parable. Most of us, when we hear this parable, identify with that first loyal and capable shift of workers in this world who work hard for a living, who with pride give our best effort every day to whatever field God has given us to labor in. It's no mere accident that most of us have attained a level of prosperity through our hard work. It's been met by whatever you choose to call it, a little luck or God's grace, maybe a twist of good fortune or even fate. But when you stand from where most of us stand on this social ladder, it's all too easy to overlook or even ignore those who, for some reason, have yet to reach even the bottom rung on that ladder, or maybe someone who's slipped off that ladder altogether. The single mom or dad in front of you at the bank cashing that government check. The 28-year-old with an MBA standing in the unemployment line. The old woman who flips your newspapers on your driveway every morning at 4 o'clock just to make ends meet. The parable says that from where God sits, the only distinctions between us and them are the false distinctions we make in order to prove and preserve our own sense of self-worth and entitlement. And that's why in the parable, when it comes time to pay the workers, the farmer pays those people first, so that we might actually see them for once. See them no longer as less than or other than, but as real human beings whose needs and value in this world are no less important than our own. I've mentioned before the work of Barbara Ehrenreich, the freelance writer who, years ago, in an undercover investigation, set out to examine the lives of the working poor of America. This was in the late 1990s. She left her middle-class existence with just $1,300 in cash and a car. That was it. And she entered the so-called unskilled labor market. She worked as a waitress, a hotel housekeeper, a maid, a Walmart employee. She worked multiple jobs at once just to achieve a sustainable lifestyle. And she found herself exhausted and overstressed, often degraded by the general public. And her book, Nickel and Dimed, is really an attempt to disprove the popular notion that the poor are simply too lazy to work, and that a job alone will defeat poverty. She found that one low-wage job is often not enough to support even one person, let alone a family. Many of the workers she encountered could only survive by living with relatives or other low-wage workers, or by living in their cars and parking lots. And Ehrenreich, in her book, reminds us that it's actually we who live off their generosity. She calls them the great philanthropists in our country. She says when someone works for less pay than she can live on, she has made a great sacrifice for you. The working poor, she says, are in fact the major philanthropists of our society. They neglect their own children so that the children of others will be cared for. They live in substandard housing so that other homes will be shiny and perfect. They endure privation so that inflation will be low. She says to be a member of the working poor is to be an anonymous donor, a nameless benefactor to everyone. And so Jesus tells us a parable about a farmer and his flatbed of grace who will not stop until he finds every single one of us on that street corner. This farmer who will look for anyone and everyone who longs to jump on board and who know that in his vineyard, all are paid the same because to God, all are worth the same. Our takeaways for today. God gives us not what we deserve, but what we need. In God's kingdom, all are worth the same. God calls us to desire for others the same grace that we have received. A grace we do not deserve, but cannot live without.
Before I spoke a word, you were singing over me. You have been so, so good to me. Before I took a breath, you breathed your life in me. You have been so, so kind to me. And oh, the overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God. Oh, it chases me down, fights till I'm found, leaves the 99. I couldn't earn it, I don't deserve it, still you give yourself away.
Me.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's podcast. And if you'd like more information, go to www.gosaintandrew.com. See you next week.